It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Isn't it too bad that we don't have stronger leadership on both sides? On both sides. I mean, you know, you have people that can't fix a budget, but then they start talking about their nominee, but they can't fix the budget. Isn't it really sad that we don't have stronger leadership on both sides?
Republican leaders here in Iowa, all across America, are standing with the Trump-Pence team, and we're honored by that. But I really do believe that Republican leaders should join millions of Americans and support the Republican nominee for president.
This garbage that some have muttered about, well, no, it's so important we keep the majority in the House so that we can keep Hillary in check. My gosh, Stuart, did you see how well we kept Obama in check?
Oh, my favorite Louis Gohmert. That was his voice in the last there. You know, they're talking. So much has happened since I've been live at the mic with you, and I want to thank Brian Fisher and Fred Jackson for filling in. And of course, we did some great shows from the Cove last week that I hope that you heard. If you didn't hear them, we did some great interviews and they are on our Facebook page. The Benin Brothers, I think that was one of the most fun interviews we've had in a very long time. Michael Brown, it was a great interview. So be sure and check our Facebook page or go online and get the podcast. It'll be marked clearly and you can figure out how to listen to those things. But you know what? Since I have been in the chair live with you, so much has happened. Not sure even where to begin. Sometimes you just can't catch up. And I, you know, Friday night, of course, the revelation of Trump's 11-year-old discussion, vulgar, horrific discussion, not only with one of the Jeb Bush's relatives who works for NBC about women, including his, you know, comments that Howard Stern made about his daughter and then commenting on that. It's really vulgar, vile stuff. And you must know, I'm sure most of you men know, some of you surely know that Howard Stern's whole method of radio is really the most repugnant, vile, and it's very effective. It's the reason I have some knowledge of it is because when I was in Chicago, I had a teenage son and I used to get in the car to drive to work every morning and I would turn the radio on. Of course, I'm always listening to the radio. My son drove the car also, and suddenly I heard this voice, and it was the most seductive, unbelievably seductive voice I'd ever heard. And it filled the car, and it was sexual beyond measure. I'd never heard anything like that on radio, and I realized that this rock station that my son had listened to, classic rock, had switched over. I picked up the phone. I pulled off the road and called right away. And they had switched over to this person named Howard Stern. And I heard exactly what he does and how he does it. And his whole shtick is to titillate and talk about the things that he and Donald Trump were talking about. That's what they do every day. They also, you know, he talks about some news and stuff, which makes it like kind of like Playboy. I listen for the articles. I'm sure a lot of men tell themselves they listen, you know, because he does talk about some content. But you have to understand this is like a part of our culture that is completely unseemly. It's the underbelly of men's sexual proclivities. I'm not making excuses at all. I'm just laying the groundwork to help you understand this can be normal discussion among men. It's wrong, and it's vulgar. It's the Playboy generation. It's the Rat Pack. It's all of that. It was all of what happened, you know, to women in other generations where they were objectified, but it was very much part of American culture. So that was very upsetting to hear all of that on Friday. Who wants to hear that? So then we're stunned and shaken, and what do we do with this? And, of course, Christians say, well, how can we support a man who says that and thinks that way and does this? And it's a dilemma. But if you were to ask me, and if I had had a chance to tell you, and I must tell you how I feel about this, in examining the entire picture, if I were to relate to you the things I know about the moral condition, the immoral acts of Hillary Clinton, some are off the record, some on, it is above our pay grade to judge people's sinfulness. I feel uncomfortable doing that. But I have to say that we are not choosing. I heard someone write me and say, Donald Trump is worse than the others. No, not really. No, he isn't. No, not based on what I know. But that in this election cannot be the issue. In another day, at another time, absolutely. If we could choose between a man who embraced the highest ideals of morality as opposed to one who talked like men do on Howard Stern, or many of you men may even listen, don't do that. It's bad for your heart and your soul. It's bad for your marriage. But we don't have that choice this time. And so we must then look at the issues. We must look at where these candidates stand. We must look at the people that are surrounding them. I have to tell you that when Donald Trump debated on Sunday night, I thought his apology was very moving. Keep in mind, this is a guy who said he never apologized. Remember? Way back when he was full of himself and pompous, this was a huge turnoff that he never said he was sorry. He apologized and apologized to his family, and he said he was ashamed of what he had done, what he'd said. You know, I accept that. Have any of you ever done anything that you were ashamed of? Something that you thought, you know, like the conversation with Bush that was recorded, you know, when he didn't know it was being recorded. Look, I believe in being in the privacy of your own home and with your friends and your family. I believe in being faithful with your words and your actions into your even your thoughts. I believe that's what God requires. But I don't think that most people manage to do that. Certainly those that are not followers of Christ, serious followers of Christ, you know. So you think about all of the conversations you've had or the things that you've said that could be made public, and we would all be condemned. And so I think the important thing to me was that he issued an apology, and I felt it was heartfelt. And by the way, I thought he knocked it out of the ballpark on Sunday night. I don't really care what. I'm usually pretty good, pretty objective, no matter what I think. I told you last time I thought Hillary Clinton was going to win, and I think she did. But in this debate, I think Donald Trump knocked it out of the ballpark. I thought he did an excellent job. And so anyway, there we are. That's some of the things that have happened that I just wanted to weigh in for you. But now Republicans, of course, the same, the usual suspects, that never were, you know, just hate the thought of someone taking power from them, are like rats leaving a sinking ship. And one of them is Paul Ryan. And I was just reading, you know, an article. This is the first I've seen this, but of course, you know, why not? Of course, this would be true. That Paul Ryan would like to run for president after Mrs. Clinton is president. And it would be easier for him, now these are my words, if he doesn't have a Republican let's say Donald Trump wins and does well and gets elected again, that's a longer time. So he's thinking, you know, he's calculating that if Mrs. Clinton wins, then, you know, I'll have a better chance because I'm going to run the next time. But I'm adding that. The thing that I read said that he wants to run after Mrs. Clinton becomes president. So he has a vested interest in Donald Trump losing. Except the only thing I think Paul Ryan doesn't understand that if Mrs. Clinton wins this election, he will never be president. Are you kidding me? What is the matter with people in this country to not understand what is at stake with this election? This is the part I don't understand. You know, what is at stake is our very freedom of religion, our Second Amendment rights. Remember that Mrs. Clinton has said that deeply held religious beliefs must be altered on issues like abortion and homosexuality. Deeply held religious beliefs, those icky things are going to get in the way and they must be altered. She has said that we are not to criticize Islam And she said, if we can't do away with our First Amendment, we'll do it through the methods of peer pressure and shaming. I could go on and on. I could go on and on about the numbers of things. I could talk about her desire to increase the Muslim immigration here to 500% without being able to vet them. I could tell you a lot of things that are very frightening. I could talk about the effect on our military of that, you know, they're looking now for uniforms that will accommodate transgenders. She's all about this. You do know that. So we have a candidate in Donald Trump that is pro-life, pro-traditional marriage. You know, he's appointed Marjorie Dannenfeldzer, a hardline pro-lifer, head of Susan B. Anthony list, to be the head of his pro-life outreach. And I could go on and on down the line. I didn't even mention the Supreme Court. Please, 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 ladies and gentlemen, don't get sidetracked on making moral judgments about a very, at least certainly at one time in his life, completely immoral man and a woman now who I don't think has any repentance at all, who is at her very core, as far as I can tell and as far as I can see and have studied and watched her and read about her and read others that know her, she's corrupt from the very center. And okay, so the GOP is, I was going to read a little bit more of this to you, but actually I'm not going to get sidetracked. I want to move to something else. You know that WikiLeaks has been releasing now more and more of Mrs. Clinton's email, and we're learning more and more things about it. Actually, let James Rosen tell this next part of the story.
Brett, good evening. The latest WikiLeaks posting of hacked emails to and from Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta lays bare what to many eyes appears to be evidence of collusion on two fronts. First, between the Clinton campaign and the woman who is now the head of the Democratic National Committee against the Sanders campaign during the Democratic primaries, and between the Clinton campaign and the Department of Justice during the Clinton email investigation.
Let's welcome Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont.
When Bernie Sanders stepped on stage for this CNN TV One town hall event in March, he probably didn't know that the evening before, Donna Brazile, then a CNN commentator and vice chair of the Democratic National Committee, now head of the DNC, had sent an email to the Clinton campaign captioned, "From time to time, I get the questions in advance," and saying, "Here's one that worries me about HRC," flagging a question intended for Clinton on the death penalty. The question noted that since 1976,
we executed 1,414 people in this country.
Clinton's communications director, Jen Palmieri, seemed grateful for Brazil's assistance, writing back that evening to say, "Yes, it is one she gets asked about. Not everyone on the campaign staff likes her answer, but can share it with you." Brazil only became interim DNC chair during the party's convention in July, after a WikiLeaks dump of DNC emails revealed pervasive collusion between Brazil's predecessor, Deborah Wasserman Schultz, and the Clinton campaign against the Sanders forces. Today, Brazil said she supported both candidates and, quote, often shared her thoughts with both. "As it pertains to the CNN debates, I never had access to questions and would never have shared them with the candidates if I did, except that the event in question was not a CNN debate, but a town hall."
And all you have to do is take a look at WikiLeaks and just see what they said about Bernie Sanders. He never had a chance, and I was so surprised to see him sign on with the devil.
All right. There are so many things about this. I'm going to give you a potpourri. The WikiLeaks exchanges we are finding out are so many damning things in this that I guess one of my greatest fears is that it's going to be just a wash because people are not listening. The DOJ, Department of Justice, was colluding with the Clinton camp over her email case. We know that the House Select Committee on Benghazi, the Democrats, coordinated with Hillary Clinton and her staff over the questions and how they would handle the case. We know that in these leaked email, they said terrible things about Catholics and evangelicals, and if I have time, I'll get back to that. Also in Haiti, the fact that they gave contracts to friends of Bill Clinton. People that were friends got top of the list and made a lot of money getting government contracts to the Clinton Foundation, all of it corrupt. Now we know James Comey is affiliated with the Clinton Foundation. I could go on and on. So ladies and gentlemen, you see what we're up against. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk about voter fraud when we return.
We are not allowed to have a U-Haul that comes to heaven with us.
Anna Marie Travers has an AFA Foundation charitable gift annuity.
The Lord has given us things that we can acquire, but you know, everything will stay here, and I'm so thankful for the American Family Annuity Fund, where we can give some to something that we so highly value.
Through the AFA Foundation, a charitable gift annuity provides a monthly income as well as a legacy of support for the American Family Association.
I cannot recommend a better person than they have at AFA to help you with getting your annuity fund. It was so easy.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Michelle. I own a little beauty and barbershop in Wiggins, Mississippi.
American Family Radio is for America.
I use your radio station as my shop radio station in order to help preach the Word of God to the general public.
This is Marcus from Farmington, Missouri, and I just wanted to state how AFA has really help me dig deeper in the Word. My favorite program is Exploring in the Word with Alex McFarland and Bert Harper, and it has set me on fire for just exploring the Word, for just digging deeper in God's Word. And it has given me actually a couple sermons. It's a wonderful program, and praise God for it, and just a blessing upon AFR. Thank you.
You can hear more stories of changed lives during our three-day Share-a-thon starting October 18th.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Alex Dunn could not believe what his teacher was doing.
He firmly stood with both his feet on top of the flag.
That's right. A history teacher in Fayetteville, North Carolina, desecrated an American flag during a lesson on the First Amendment. And Alex got it all on camera.
Just such a disgraceful thing for a person to do, especially in front of so many military children who understand the meaning of the flag. Apparently, unlike him.
So Alex jumped up, snatched the flag, and walked out of the classroom. His dad is active duty military, and he was taught to always respect Old Glory. But now the teenager's act of patriotism could land him in hot water. The teacher says Alex broke the law and wants him to be punished. I doubt that'll happen, but if it does, I'll be more than happy to pay his fine. It's the least I can do for a brave American patriot like Alex Dunn. Find out what happened to that flag by going to ToddStearns.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Please join me in welcoming our former vice president, a climate change leader and an all-around great guy, Al Gore.
Global warming is not the only climate change that was in evidence today in the all-important battleground state of Florida. The frosty relations between former Vice President Al Gore and Hillary Clinton melted faster than the polar ice cap.
I can't wait to have Al Gore advising me when I am President of the United States.
Just a few months ago, Gore refused to endorse Hillary during the primary against Bernie Sanders and sat out the Democratic convention. But with the rise of Donald Trump and a detente arranged by Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta, for whom climate change is a passion, Gore got off the sidelines.
Your vote really, really, really counts a lot. You can consider me as an exhibit A of that truth.
Today, he tried to energize millennials who are thinking of voting for third-party candidates, Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. They may not remember that in Florida in 2000, Ralph Nader got more than 97,000 votes, but Gore does. He blames the independent candidate for costing him the presidency. Gore lost Florida to George W. Bush by just 537 votes. The former vice president also blamed the infidelities of Bill Clinton, who is campaigning elsewhere in Florida today, and the Monica Lewinsky affair for costing him the election. After losing the presidency, Gore became a champion of climate change awareness, but came under fire for his own carbon footprint after producing an inconvenient truth. His gas and electricity bill for his 20-room home in Nashville was 20 times the national average, $30,000 a year. The former vice president also came under attack for selling his current TV to Al Jazeera for an estimated $500 million, the network owned by the oil-rich government of Qatar.
Well, there's so much to say about that clip. Thank you, Jennifer Griffin of Fox News. We could say a lot of things, couldn't we? We could talk about Al Gore's foolishness on climate change. We could talk about his, this always, when I think of Al Gore, I think of him in the hot tub on Saturday Night Live with a rose in his teeth as playing a gay man. I remember, that's what I think of when I think of Al Gore. But he's going to be advising Mrs. Clinton's campaign, so don't worry. It will be, you know, it'll all be in good hands. But here's the thing. Remember, when you think of Al Gore, we can't help but think about that unbelievably close election between George W. Bush and Al Gore. Jennifer just mentioned it. 537 votes in the state of Florida is what determined the outcome of that election. And that's why election integrity is so important. I've asked Hans von Spakovsky, who you know well, he's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, also the author of Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk with John Fund. They've written this book. And Hans joins me this morning. Good morning, Hans.
Good morning, Sandy.
Boy, it's almost a fire hose on the election integrity issue. Almost every single day we hear more bad news. And I know you've written an update, so tell us what's happening.
Well, unfortunately, our voter registration rolls all over the country are in really bad shape. In Virginia, for example, the Public Interest Legal Foundation, which is a conservative advocacy organization, got information from 8 counties in the state of Virginia that showed that more than 1,000 non-citizens had been removed from the rolls. And these are people who were just found by accident. The rest of the counties that they tried to get information from refused to provide it because apparently they were instructed by Democratic officials appointed by Governor Terry McAuliffe at the State Election Board not to provide that information, even though they're obligated to under the law. So, look, that's 1,000 non-citizens in just 8 counties. There's more than 120 more counties in the state. And this is in Virginia, which, as you know, is a purple state. It's a battleground state. We don't know who's going to win the state. Elections here have been very close. We had a statewide attorney general's race decided by less than 200 votes just a couple of years ago.
Well, and also, Hans, to point out, Arlington County and Fairfax County are huge. If anybody's in Chicago and they think Cook County, I would say Arlington County is kind of that, it's just that rambling and vast. And neither of those counties, Arlington or Fairfax, are included in this study. This is just a random sampling of, what, 6 smaller counties, right?
That's right. Although, for example, Fairfax County, I know that 5 years ago, actually when I was on the county electoral board, we found 300 non-citizens at that time, about half of whom had voted in prior elections. We did remove them from the rolls, but when we turned it over to law enforcement did absolutely nothing about it. That was 300 cases of prosecutable voter fraud. We have 1,000 cases now of prosecutable voter fraud, and law enforcement is doing absolutely nothing about it. So when you hear people say, oh, there's no voter fraud cases, well, there's one reason for you right there.
So, Hans, as I understand it, and have certainly seen it, and anybody that goes to the DMV, unfortunately, so many people around the country are not seeing what we're seeing in D.C. I'll just say then when I go to the DMV, if I find an English-speaking person in American garb, it's like a rare occasion. I get a gold star. It's like a foreign land. It truly is. And that's where they sign up automatically to vote, motor voter. And it's almost impossible to reverse that. Not all of them vote, but many of them do. We also know, like, that killer in which state? Was it Colorado? Recently, that murderer, the Islamist, had voted in three elections, you know, through motor voter. So, but there is a kind of a standard list that you can check if you really want to clean the rolls. There is a list you can check against, correct? But you don't have access to that. Is that right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, they have a list of aliens who either are in the country legally and therefore have gotten a visa and so forth, or people who are here illegally but have gotten caught. But they make it very difficult for state officials to get access, and that's not going to identify the literally millions, for example, of illegal aliens who are in the country who've never been caught. Now, the only way to do anything about this is to do what states like Kansas, Arizona, Alabama, Georgia have tried to do, which is to put in a law, state law, that says that when you register to vote, you have to provide proof that you are a U.S. citizen. Of course, the problem is those provisions are not enforced. Why? Because the U.S. Justice Department and its political allies, NAACP, the League of Women Voters, others, have all gone to court to prevent those provisions from being enforced. Now, you've got to ask yourself, Sandy, why do they not want states verifying whether people are U.S. citizens? And the answer is pretty clear. They want non-citizens registering and voting in this election, despite the fact that it's illegal, because they think it's going to give them a political advantage.
And there are other states that are, they're always swing states that are, you know, Ohio used to be one of the worst states. We always had to follow that. I remember all kinds of stories about selling cigarettes and for votes and all kinds of things that seemed mild now. But now it's all out voter fraud. And Philadelphia, I think, yes, arguably is one of the worst places. Can you tell us what's going on
sure.
there?
Sure. Philadelphia is, I'd have to say, one of the worst places in the country. The Public Interest Legal Foundation also went to court there and discovered also thousands of non-citizens and felons on the voter rolls. These are incarcerated felons, people who are in prison. And when the Public Interest Legal Foundation pointed out to election officials that these folks, these felons, they're not supposed to be on the rolls. Pennsylvania law says if you're in prison, you can't vote. The election officials not only weren't embarrassed that these folks were on the rolls, they said, well, we're not taking them off the rolls. We still see no reason to comply with that state law. We want them to vote.
At the same time, we've got Jay Johnson, head of the Department of Homeland Security, repeatedly, I think maybe the last time you and I spoke, Hans, he is constantly talking about Russian hacking of our voter system. And they keep telling us other Russians are... The Russians are trying to hack it. They better not. They're trying, and they're trying to help Donald Trump, is the inference. But do we have any evidence at all that Russians are trying to hack our voter system?
No, there's no credible threat of that. Now, there have been attempts to probe or hack into some statewide voter registration databases, and that's because the very same civil rights group, so-called, who have been fighting against citizenship verification, against voter ID, they are the ones who have pushed a number of states to allow online voter registration. Well, that's a foolish thing to do because that does provide hackers a pathway into the voter registration database. Now, so far, no data has been altered. And the thing is, those databases are not tied into the voting equipment we vote on election day, the vote tabulation equipment that counts the ballots. Those are completely separate systems, and the voting equipment is not connected to the Internet. So hacking that from a home computer sitting in Russia is basically impossible.
All right, so, but obviously, and I think I think I went way over the line further than you would go. I do think that they're setting us up, because I don't trust anybody at this point. If, on the outside chance that Donald Trump should prevail, I believe this is a setup to make people not believe in what happened and to do something about it as a result. If people are convinced that Donald Trump is, you know, loves Vladimir Putin and they're coordinating and Vladimir Putin is helping him win the national election, I think that's the story they will tell. And that's people need to understand. I think we're being manipulated by the information that's coming out. The other thing that our friend J. Christian Adams has reported, Hans, is that in Virginia, let's see, that we can trace some of this voter fraud back to, guess who, George Soros. I guess Edgardo Cortez is the commissioner of the Commonwealth's Department of Elections. And he was a left-wing operative of Virginia Voting Rights Restoration Campaign within the left-wing Advancement Project. And the project was funded and supported by, guess who is in everything, George Soros, through his Tides Foundation and Open Society Foundations. What do you know about the connection to George Soros and all this voter fraud? Anything, Hans?
Well, yeah, because this was public. This was reported by various media sources. Look, George Soros, not only does he support all of these groups like the Advancement Project who have been suing to stop voter ID, to stop proof of citizenship, to stop verification of the accuracy of voter registration information. But Soros actually gave $5 million to a big law firm in Washington, D.C. It's called Perkins Coie. One of their main lawyers there, Mark Elias, is Hillary Clinton's lawyer for her campaign. And that $5 million, which was given more than a year ago, has been funding, for example, the lawsuit that Elias filed against Virginia's voter ID law, lawsuits filed in Wisconsin, Ohio, all these other states trying to stop everything from voter ID to changes in early voting. And they sued Ohio, for example, because Ohio had gotten rid of same-day registration, which is a recipe for voter fraud. So on the one hand, they're doing everything they can to make it easier to commit actual fraud in elections by felons, non-citizens, others want to steal elections, while minimizing that as any kind of danger. You know how often they say, oh, there's no such thing as voter fraud, but then saying, oh, there's this terrible cyber threat from the Russians, which isn't really there. So I kind of agree with you, Sandy, on the story that you're saying you think they're going to tell after the election.
All right. In conclusion, you're an attorney, Hans, and a very good one. It needs to be said that in spite of what's happening now, voter fraud is prosecutable. It is a felon to fraudulently vote. And would you expect that if a new administration should come in, that people might be at risk if they are doing this?
Well, that depends who's running the administration. I mean, look, I hate to say this, but again, I'll give you a quick example of what I mean. Look, there's a federal law that says that election officials have to maintain their voter lists. You know, that means take off people who've died, take off people who have moved away, et cetera. This Obama administration, came in, and their political people specifically said to Justice Department lawyers, that provision will not be enforced by this administration. And in 8 years, they haven't filed a single case under that federal law against states to make them clean up their voter rolls.
So a new administration, like a Trump administration, who appointed, we hope, someone in justice who would actually enforce the law, might, say a Jeff Sessions, might actually go after those people, though.
That's right. Listen, there's 1,300 and more cases just in the state of Virginia waiting to be prosecuted.
All right. Well, it's pretty discouraging. It is discouraging, and yet we fight. We have to fight. And Hans, thanks so much. And by the way, we'll put your article, which is, I'm sorry, I lost it. I've got so many articles in front of me. But we're going to put Hans's latest article, it's in the Washington Examiner, on our Facebook page so that you can read it and share it. And Hans, always, for your diligence on this issue, we do appreciate it so much. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Andy. Anytime.
All right. All right. Well, then, and yet there's more. So stay with me. Some interesting stuff when we come back about the media's cooperation and collusion with the Clinton campaign. It's becoming really pretty shocking, even to me. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
Hello, everyone. This is James Dobson inviting you to join us for our next edition of Family Talk. Every day we come to these microphones with someone in mind, whether it's a busy mom looking for tips on discipline or a husband who wants to learn more about connecting with his wife. We want to put an arm around your family in any way that we can. So join us next time for Family Talk.
Each weekday morning at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's been clear for some time that Western civilization is in peril in Europe. Now, a self-described, formerly liberal Dutch academic, Machteld Zee, explains why. Dr. Zee has closely studied the nearly 90 courts in Britain that dispense justice in accordance with Sharia, Islam supremacist legal code. She found that the metastasizing of such courts is only partly due to the Islamists' energy in spreading their infrastructure and influence in the West. According to Breitbart News in her new book, Holy Identities, On the Road to a Sharia State, Dr. Zee identifies the other chief culprit as, quote, useful infidels, unquote, who are, quote, helping conservative Muslims isolate Islamic communities and encourage them to be more religious and insular, unquote. In other words, Muslims become more Sharia adherent and infidels more submissive. We're next. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, next week is Share-a-thon, and it's always fun. I think Tim will be joining me, and we have a lot of fun when we do that. It's a chance to talk to you, and I think one of the biggest treats is to hear your comments about what AFA means to you. So if you haven't done this, how about you call 877-876-8893, 877-876-8893, and just tell the story of what AFR Talk means to you. It can be specific about a show. It could be about this show, any other show. It can be about a moment, a time, your thoughts about it. And we would love, you know, we love hearing them. And then we will use them next week when we do Share-a-thon. So again, that phone number is 877-876-8893. Well, just as an aside, I have to tell you, I was really surprised when a friend sent me this morning a video clip of Louis Farrakhan endorsing Donald Trump. Pretty surprising. Here's the first minute.
On September 30th, the collective...
When Mr. Trump said, we can't allow these Muslims, refugees, into America. Now, a lot of people were upset with him, but I know, sir, that the hatred for America in the Muslim world is building. So in this way, Mr. Trump, I think, is wise to vet anyone coming from that area into America, because the hatred for America is in the streets now. So if those people are refugees and America feels I gotta let 10,000 of them in because America created the problem. Now, if you let them in and you don't vet them carefully, you might be letting in your own destruction.
That's Louis Farrakhan. That just really surprises me. I have to tell you, I don't even know quite what to think about it. I think he's right, but I didn't think he felt that way. I guess, you know, even members of what's his organization? I'm just drawing a blank here. The Muslim... whatever the American Association of Muslims that he heads is not Sharia compliant, and they live an American life. And so it just amazes me to hear him come out and say that, though. I just thought you'd find that interesting, because I did. I talked to you a great deal about these leaks that are coming out, and I itemized several of them in the first segment. I'm not going to go back and do that again. I hope that as you listen to the news, I hope you hear more of them. There are so many amazing revelations about collusion between the Justice Department and the Clinton campaign over prosecuting her email. You know, you heard that Donna Brazile leaked a question from a town hall to help her prepare. And then you hear, I think we played this clip where the questioner then repeated exactly, verbatim, the question that Donna Brazile gave to Hillary Clinton so that she'd know how to answer. There's more here. Let's see. Clinton staffers boasted that ABC News anchor George Stephanopoulos used campaign talking points to rebut Clinton Cash author Peter Schweizer in an April 2015 interview. The email thread shows delighted communications aides congratulating Stephanopoulos and one another over the anchor's successful parry with Schweizer. And, of course, Schweitzer's Clinton Cash book, I've never interviewed Peter, and we need to change that, talks about how she and her husband Bill became so rich in public office, and how they sold the office, and how they sold their speeches. She was making $250,000, $300,000 a speech. You do understand that. That's just ridiculous. We also know from WikiLeaks some of the things she said in those speeches. Remember, she did not want to release them because she said... basically, she made the statement, look, this is not the most damning thing, but it is if you just stop and think about it. She said you have to have two positions, one public and one private. In other words, what you say publicly about how you feel about something is not what you really think. And so she talked to them about, there are several different speeches. So one of them was expressing open borders. She wants open borders, just a totally like one big world. That was just part of it. It's just amazing the things that are coming out. And so WikiLeaks is doing us a great service. I want you to know that Media Research Center has been doing a study here, and they found that the networks have aired 198 minutes on the Donald Trump tape 11 years ago when he's having this conversation with Billy Bush and with Howard Stern. So they've aired 198 minutes on that. And on the email, let's see, 11 minutes on the Clinton WikiLeaks news. Yeah, so a total of 198 minutes on the Trump tape, 11 minutes on the Clinton WikiLeaks news. So you can see that most people are not going to hear. It's just all one side. So between voter fraud and the collusion of the media and the collusion of public officials and the lawlessness of this administration, it's if Donald Trump should prevail in this election, it really will be nothing short of a miracle. I have to tell you, I was really praying Friday because there is so much at stake. I sort of feel the metaphor to me is that we're in a, you see people in movies, maybe in the Titanic, where a ship starts to list and all the people like roll over to one side or fall over to one side and it lists the other way and they fall over to the other side. I think that we are in the hull of this ship and it's listing and it's going from one side to the next side and we know the end is not going to be good, you know, unless somebody can sort of stabilize the ship. So I do really feel that's kind of what we're on. So Friday, on us just poured, not that prayer should have to be reported, but I really did ask God to bring down the enemies of truth, and to flummox their, man, they had everything set up against Donald Trump. You know, between the Martha Raddatz trying to, you know, to flummox him, trying to debate him herself, the questions that they ask, the help that Mrs. Clinton always gets, and the reporting of the debate, it's just amazing. And that's why I thought Donald Trump did an amazing job. I really did. I thank God for that outcome because I felt he was speaking the truth, and I thought Mrs. Clinton was just the deceiver that she always is. And it creeps me out that people would even think to vote for her in the next election. I just can't imagine what they are thinking and what they don't understand. And so, by the way, Billy Bush, the relative of Jeb Bush, is going to be fired over that tape of the Trump remarks. Who knows why that is? Meanwhile, NBC with Billy Bush was the one that leaked that undercover hidden tape that Trump didn't know was being made. But now NBC is, according to The Blaze this morning and other sources, a mass hunt is underway for more damaging Trump comments. They're asking everyone. They're asking for people to review past Celebrity Apprentice footage, even those that weren't aired, and to go through all of it with fine-tooth comb to find really bad stuff about Donald Trump. That's NBC. You know, the news source, NBC, the news, your trusted source for news, Peter Jennings and all the others of Peter Jennings fame in those days. It's just, this is where we've come to. It's like all the news media out to destroy him and out to help Mrs. Clinton. Yeah, and there's another story. I don't even have time to go. This is really complicated, but it's fascinating. I will do my best. The Washington Post did an incredible hit piece on Breitbart last week. And Steve Bannon, who you've heard me interview here, runs Breitbart now. He has left Breitbart, temporarily stepped aside because he's running the Trump campaign. And so they came out with a piece that accused Steve Bannon and others at Breitbart of being anti-Semitic. And it was really an awful piece. And so they referred to one particular person's article. And that person is, if I can get his name, it's Matthew Tierman. Let me just read a little bit of Matthew Tierman, in a letter to the editor at the Post, which they did publish, in regard to their hit piece against his piece and Breitbart News. He said, "This past Friday evening, you posted an editorial under the Post's view entitled, 'Donald Trump is Normalizing Bigotry.' In this post, you utilized my Breitbart column, which was called 'WAPO's Ann Applebaum Embarks on Kremlin-Style Disinformation Offensive versus the Anti-Globalist Right,' to give credence to the thesis in your post title. The column I posted earlier in the week at Breitbart.com exposed some of the lesser-known cross-currents for non-Poles of recent Polish political history and your columnists, Ann Applebaum's connection to the previous government. Now, why is that relevant? Just, I'll try to make this simple, and I only read it once, so forgive me if I stumble a little bit. It turns out that Mrs. Applebaum, who's supposedly a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who writes for the Post and is supposed to be, you know, their A-list writer who's beyond reproach, is married to the foreign minister Radoslaw Sierocki, whose party was ejected from power in a clean democratic election in 2015. In other words, you fill in the blanks about what kind of a person he is, which gave the Poles a free government. This guy knows a lot about Polish internal affairs, so he talks a lot about that. But Ann Applebaum is not an objective observer, and Ann Applebaum is Jewish. And so in Matthew Tierman's piece on Ann Applebaum, exposing her connections, he says that she's Jewish. And on the basis of doing that, the Washington Post then accuses Matthew Tierman and Breitbart of being anti-Semitic. The trouble is Matthew Tierman is Jewish. By the way, Joel Pollack, who's an editor for Breitbart, is Jewish. He's one of the senior editors. There are a lot of Jewish people that write for Breitbart. So it's really ridiculous, but it's a great hit, isn't it? And truth doesn't seem to be, you know, truth is not important in these days. So the Washington Post has gone after, you can imagine, they hate Steve Bannon and they hate Breitbart because Breitbart does expose a lot of things that no one else will expose. And by the way, Breitbart is also such a stalwart when it comes to fighting the Republican establishment. So a lot of people are not crazy about Breitbart. They're kind of the lone wolf out, not the lone, their Conservative Review is great too. I don't know what's happened with The Blaze. It's gotten, I don't have the same trust for it as I once did. It's gotten a little strange, and I think several people have left, and I don't really know why I'm not prepared to comment on that, but I don't have the same trust in it. I'll just say that. And then I don't know if I told you this, but this is amazing too. This is actually an article out of Breitbart, and the title is Exposed, FBI Director James Comey's Clinton Foundation Connection. A review of FBI Director James Comey's professional history and relationships so that the Obama cabinet leader, now under fire for his handling of the investigation of Hillary Clinton, is deeply entrenched in the big money cronyism culture of Washington. His personal and professional relationships, all undisclosed as he announced the Bureau would not prosecute Clinton, reinforced bipartisan concerns that he may have politicized the criminal probe. Now, why? Because these concerns focus on millions of dollars that Comey accepted from a Clinton Foundation defense contractor, Comey's former membership on a Clinton Foundation corporate partners board, and his surprising financial relationship with his brother Peter Comey, who works at the law firm that does the Clinton Foundation's taxes. There's a lot more to that story, of course. I can't read it all. We should put that on our Facebook page. It makes me sad to read it, to be truthful. This stuff does not make me happy. It makes me sick and sad. But this is from Breitbart. It's Exposed, FBI Director James Comey's Clinton Foundation Connection. It's written by Patrick Howley. We'll put that on our Facebook page. Well, there's a lot more news and information, as you can imagine. Just this week, a judge turned six states into sanctuary cities. A new order from a federal judge issued a week from last Friday will prevent ICE from placing detainers on many illegal aliens held in local jails in six states. This radical violation of American sovereignty, judicial tyranny on steroids, will have the effect of creating a judicial sanctuary for sanctuary cities and prevent the Obama administration from detaining even the few illegal aliens they are pursuing. All right, so it's de facto amnesty by a judge, and that's written by Daniel Horowitz of Conservative Review. So, you know, I could just go on and on, but we are not done until we're done, are we? We just put one foot in front of the other and pray that God, because certainly God can show his great strength and do things like last Friday night. How could Donald Trump have prevailed as he did in that debate under his circumstances, given what had happened, the ongoing barrage of reports of what he had said, the disgusting things that he had said? How could he have survived that debate? I believe that God, you know, answered prayer Friday night. And that doesn't mean Donald Trump's righteous, but I believe that he's trying to do things right. And I think God really came to his aid. Now we'll see what happens. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.